Praise 100.9 and 92.7 Charlotte's Inspiration Station. This is Community Voices with Ron Holland, giving you an opportunity to share your thoughts, your perspective, your views on a broad range of issues impacting your neighborhood, community, your city, our nation, and indeed, our world. This morning is going to be both thought-provoking and reflective. As Americans, as people of faith, regardless of traditions, as human beings, we need some time for introspection. The shooting massacre in Newton, Connecticut has further exposed a gaping hole in the collective soul of our nation. When 20 beautiful children, babies, ranging from 6 to 7 years old, can be shot to death, massacred in their classrooms, we've arrived at a point where tough questions are required. This morning on Community Voices, the Sandy Hook Elementary School massacre, coming to grips with our culture of violence, here on Praise 100.9 and 92.7, Charlotte's Inspiration Station. Community Voices with Ron Holland. In-depth analysis, thought-provoking, and hard-hitting. Community Voices with Ron Holland, giving you an opportunity to share what's on your mind and in your heart. Community Voices with Ron Holland on Praise 100.9, Charlotte's Inspiration Station. This morning, I'm flying solo in the studio. No so-called experts, no pontificating, bloviating pundits. Just me, a dad, a gun owner, a Christian, a father, a husband, and someone who cares about what is happening in the community. Someone who enjoys movies and television programs with lots of guns, fighting, and violence. Someone who legally carries a concealed weapon. Someone who stands firm on the idea that the Second Amendment guarantees our rights as law-abiding citizens, the right to bear arms. But someone who believes strongly and firmly that enough is enough. But first, I want to deal with the question of God's whereabouts during this bloody massacre, because that question has been raised numerous times by a host of people on a number of television and radio broadcasts. So I wanted to talk a little bit about that. There have been some clergy that have offered real leadership by encouraging the nation to pray for the victims, the families, and the survivors of this massacre. They've been sober, they've been rational, they've been honest about how difficult it is to come to grips with this tragedy and how difficult it is to answer the whys, the wheres, and of course, the hows, and of course, how it relates to God. But on the other hand, there have been some clergy, irresponsible in my judgment. They are nationally recognized. They have a television, radio show. Some are simply on the fringes, yet their idiocy. And I want to be extraordinarily frank with you. There is an idiocy that is afoot here. And it found its way into our public discourse. They've articulated the most fallacious and nonsensical arguments that require, in my judgment, a robust response from all rational thinking Americans. They've said some horrible things. And of course, it centered around school prayer. And we're going to get to that, because I think it's instructive that we consider that there are going to be some fringe elements who are going to make some extraordinary statements about what has occurred. And the reason that they're on the fringe, because some of their perspectives, some of their core beliefs are outside of the normal rational thinking American. But I want to first address the question, where was God during this bloody massacre? During this carnage at the Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown, Connecticut. And I, like you, have this question. I asked this question really out of pain, out of frustration, real frustration, out of anger. And the question was bubbling up in my spirit, and I had to write about it. And of course, you know, I'm on Facebook, and I, like many of you, have expressed your feelings on Facebook and Twitter and on a number of networking platforms. And I think it's instructive for all of us to really understand that there is sort of a cathartic moment I think we all have to participate in. And for me, it was a cathartic moment just to ask a series of questions of God. And I think it's all right, given the pain. And it's an unthinkable pain. So I wrote, God, where were you? An unspeakable evil descended upon the Sandy Hook Elementary School. God, where were you? Where were your warrior angels? Why weren't they standing at the ready to defend those 20 beautiful babies? God, where were you? Where was your hedge of protection when that unspeakable evil stormed through the classroom door and began gunning down those beautiful babies and brave teachers? When that unspeakable evil menaced over those beautiful babies and fired shot after shot after shot, where were those guardian angels? God, didn't you see from heaven's balcony that unspeakable evil don himself in all black, loaded those instruments of death with dozens of rounds, got into his vehicle to head to the school to employ his evil and sinister attack on those beautiful babies and dedicated educators? Why didn't you peel back the ceiling of the universe and reach down to stop this despicable and evil act? Why, God? Why? Why couldn't you do something about this? Why couldn't you stop this heinous act? God, an unspeakable evil descended on the Sandy Hook Elementary School. Can you explain why the prayers of those parents weren't answered when they beseeched your spirit to protect them in their absence? Did you not see those beautiful babies in church the Sunday before this bloody massacre? Did it not mean anything to you, God, that they were going to honor you and your son during a Christmas play? That they were taught by loving parents to bless their food before eating a meal, acknowledging your power? That they brought an immeasurable joy to the lives of their parents? God, where were you? Where was your hedge of protection? Where were your angels? God, when that unspeakable evil descended upon the Sandy Hook Elementary School, where was your divine intervention when that monster repeatedly shot 20 beautiful babies and 6 dedicated teachers? God, where were you? These were questions that I reflected on. And it's these are questions are obviously a reflection of pain, sorrow, bewilderment in my judgment. And I'm sure the parents are grappling with all of this as well. I'm sure the town of Newtown, as well as the entire country, is asking similar questions with a similar type of sentiment in bewilderment and frustration. I've heard a bevy of explanations. I've read a whole lot of stuff during all of this. And to be frank, none of which really suffice, especially when you consider the depth of pain the parents are now required to endure. I'm certainly so proud of our president having to address this issue in such a sober way. But it got me thinking about some things, and it got me rethinking this thing about God. And yes, I'm on a Christian radio station, and I am a Christian to the core, but I think it's incumbent upon us to ask some very tough questions. Because for me, the last several days, I've been wrestling with the whys, the wheres, the hows. How could God allow the bloody massacre of those beautiful babies and loving teachers? Where was God when that monster hovered over those babies and fired multiple shots into their precious little bodies? Why did God not intervene to prevent this awful massacre? So in wrestling with these questions, I was drawn to a host of disturbing. And the reason I say disturbing is because I've wrestled with these particular scripture before, these passages that I found difficult to reconcile. Now, for the sake of brevity, I'm going to cite these, you know, very quickly. 1 Samuel 15:3, Deuteronomy 3:1. Chronicles 21, and there are a bevy of other scripture that it's difficult to reconcile in the context of this abject and absolute violence. In these passages of scripture, the God of the Bible commands and condones wholesale massacre, including babies. And of course, the standard fare in interpreting these and similar scriptures to argue about disobedience, idol worship, and the enemies of the biblical God's supposed chosen people. Here's a quote. Now go and attack Amalek and utterly destroy all that they have and spare them not, but slay both man and woman, infant and suckling. 1 Samuel 15:3. And utterly destroyed, and we utterly destroyed them as we did unto Sihon, king of Hesbon, utterly destroying the men, women, and children of every city. That's Deuteronomy 3:6. Happy shall he be that taketh and dasheth thy little ones against the stones. That's Psalms 137:9. Killing babies. Killing infants, killing children at the behest of the God of the Bible. Now, in the command to attack Amalek, the biblical God's wrath is directed at the descendants of people who attacked Israel over 300 years prior. So apart from the wholesale religious-oriented annihilation of an entire race of people, which in today's society would be considered genocide and not tolerated, we see the God of the Bible directing slaughter, including babies. And it's worth noting that religious fervor and or religious prejudice plays a key role in acts of genocide, in acts of revenge and annihilation of groups of people. So if the God of the Bible can command the murder of innocent babies during so-called biblical times, inquiries of his whereabouts during the Newtown, Connecticut massacre aren't sufficient, primarily because the death of innocent people appears to have no resonance with a biblical entity that can command the massacre of innocent people, including babies. I know this is hard and tough for some of you to hear this, but this is a reality. This is some of the things that we've grown up to hear and to listen to and participate in terms of Bible study. Innocent babies killed, innocent children killed at the behest of the biblical God. Now, I've said on numerous occasions that I firmly believe God is not the problem. It's what we've been taught about God where the problems emerge. It's what we've been taught. And I want to be absolutely clear about this. And I'll be redundant and repeat it. God is not the problem. It's what we've been taught about God where the problem emerges. And that is a subject of an entire different discussion. But it brings me to the most despicable idiocy spewed from the mouths of individuals who claim to know and speak for God. I want you to take a listen to this.
You know, the question is going to come up. Well, where was God? I thought God cared about the little children. God protected the little children. Where was God when all this went down? And here's the bottom line. God is not going to go where he's not wanted. Now, we have spent since 1962, we're 50 years into this now, we have spent 50 years telling God to get lost, telling God we do not want you in our schools. We don't want to pray to you in our schools. We don't want to pray to you before football games. We don't want to pray to you at graduation. We don't want anybody talking about you in a graduation speech. We don't want anybody referring to you. We don't want your word read in our schools. So in 1962, we kicked prayer out of the schools. In 1963, we kicked the word of God out of schools. In 1980, we kicked the Ten Commandments out of schools. We've kicked God out of our public school system. And I think God would say to us, hey, I'll be glad to protect your children, but you got to invite me back into your world first.
Now, in the wake of the bloody massacre here, I've been reading articles and viewing news segments on television about so-called evangelical Christians blaming this horrible tragedy on the false notion that God and prayer was taken out of the school. For years now, evangelical Christians have been exhausting absolutely every avenue to reinstitute prayer into our nation's school system. They vilified opposition to their efforts, and they've obscured the actual arguments surrounding this issue. Now, I want to be frank here. It's a fallacious attempt, a dishonest attempt, to force a particular religion on the American people. Let's be clear about something. We are a diverse nation. There is a bevy of other religious beliefs in our nation, and our founding fathers were intentional about the separation of church and state. I want to be clear about that. They led with purpose, with vigor, to avoid religious dictatorship by any one religion, especially if its members are in the majority. That is why the First Amendment to the Constitution specifically forbids the state from imposing religion on its citizens. The Constitution forbids Congress from making, quote, no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, end quote. The Constitution goes on to say that there is to be no religious test to serve in our government. Now, it's the establishment of religion by the state that should give every American pause, because it's critical that we not prohibit the free exercise of religious traditions and practices by people outside of our own faith. Now, I want to absolutely be crystal clear here, and I will venture to guess that many of you will share this sentiment. I send my children to school. I have three. One 20, my daughter is 16, my youngest is 5. And I send them to school to learn, not to proselytize. I do not want my children imposing their religious beliefs on anyone, especially to a captive audience in a public school setting. And to be frank with you, nor do I want children from other religious faiths imposing their religious views on my kids. That is why I support a moment of silence. It gives each child an opportunity to pray, to meditate, to reflect as they please. Silent, folks, silent prayer, personal prayer, has never been infringed upon. It's never been outlawed. What the Supreme Court has said in the case of Engle versus Vitale is that the government, in this case, the school and its officials, have absolutely no business composing a prayer for students to recite. The court said the effort by a board of education to compose a prayer for students to recite, particularly to a captive audience of children, amounted to state-sponsored devotion. In all of the Supreme Court cases regarding school prayer, the court did not remove prayer from school. What was removed is government-sponsored worship and devotion. Public school students have always had the right to pray on their own during a moment of silence, while they're blessing their lunch, praying before an exam, as I've done on countless times, particularly when I didn't study for a test. I found myself bowing my head, closing my eyes, and praying really hard that I passed the test. I wasn't forbidden from that. Praying before a meeting with the principal, another situation where I found myself hoping that I didn't get suspended. So bow my head in prayer. And that right is given to every student, particularly when class schedules permit these kinds of activities, and particularly when it is a personal endeavor.
So as I mull over this issue, what's profoundly disappointing is a failure to examine the issue beyond the headlines or the agenda-driven rhetoric of fundamentalist Christian evangelicals. Because at the heart of this debate is not the right to pray, but government-sponsored discrimination led by people whose sole desire is to impose their religion on others. In the schools where... let me say it this way. If the schools were to impose a Christian prayer over the PA system, what about the Jewish child? What about the Buddhist child? What about the Muslim or the Jehovah's Witness or the child that embraces Wiccan or the tenets of paganism? Do the children of these other faith traditions not have a right to access the same PA system to recite their prayers? I can't imagine anyone with even a cursory understanding of history embracing this type of discrimination. And although I will fight against discrimination of all types as parents, there are limitations to what I want my children exposed to. As an example, I don't want my children exposed to Wiccan prayers or pagan recitation over the school's PA system. That's why a moment of silence is the only legitimate solution to the argument. No one is imposed upon, and our right to pray as we choose is sacrosanct. So the folks espousing this idiocy, suggesting that this bloody massacre is the result of prayer being taken out of schools, is absolute lunacy. These people, I don't care if they have a national television or radio show or held up in some dive spewing their despicable and hateful rhetoric, they should be roundly rejected by every rational thinking American. They are part of a lunatic fringe whose voice is only heard when tragedy occurs. And often, their voices are a stain on God, a stain on faith, a stain on human decency. How they come out with this stuff? We, folks, have millions of guns in circulation in the United States. There are nearly 10,000 gun-related murders in our country each year. And since the late 80s, I believe there have been 70 gun-related shootings in our schools. And up until now, the Virginia Tech and the Columbine school shooting ranked as two of the worst school shooting massacres in the country and in history, for that matter. But I think now, with the massacre at Sandy Hook Elementary School, it unfortunately has claimed the title as the worst, the most horrific, the most bloody school shooting in our nation's history, because primarily because of the ages of the students. We're talking about 6 and 7 year old babies. The sheer number of these beautiful babies sent shockwaves throughout our country. Of course, you know, there's a national consensus that criminals and people with mental illness ought not buy, own, or have access to firearms. And we all pretty much agree that the criminal element in our society poses a significant threat to community if they have access to firearms. So too do people with mental illness. And so there needs to be a sustained effort in ensuring that these individuals are not getting access to guns. There's no shortage of statistics that bolster the notion that criminals with guns is a bad idea. So why it has been or has become an arduous task encouraging our congressional leaders to pass sensible gun control laws, it is one of those things that I think worthy of our consideration, that we ask the question, where are we and why aren't we doing more to effectively push our congressional leaders to do more on this issue? And I am certainly delighted that President Obama is taking a firm stance and demanding. Of course, as you know, he appointed Vice President Joe Biden to lead an effort. And in fact, he want on his desk in January some really robust solutions to these particular problems. The NRA stifles reasonable discourse around this issue, and they have, for many, many years, have had a vice grip on many of our elected officials. If we're ever going to get a significant handle on what has emerged as a national crisis, you're talking about not just school shootings. You know, a couple of months ago, we were, and I did a show on the Aurora shooting, Aurora, Colorado, where that monster, and I'm calling these folks monster, where that monster went into that movie theater and shot those folks down. They had nowhere to go, nowhere to run. So we're talking about a plethora of different types of shootings happening all across the country in cities, large metropolitan areas, urban centers. Places like Chicago where gangbangers are shooting folks at funerals. Not just criminals who are robbing folks. We're talking about an individual who will literally walk up to a funeral while a mother is leaning over the casket, crying and moaning over her child who had just been shot, and some gang member busts in a church and just indiscriminately starts shooting. There's a national crisis here that we have to stop. And I'm glad President Obama is taking up this effort. And as I've said, if we're going to get a significant handle on what has emerged as a national crisis, we've got to break the grip the NRA and other gun rights lobbyists have on our elected officials. The irony is that most people who belong to the NRA favor reasonable gun control measures, especially as it relates to criminal background checks, closing the gun show loophole, which is the cause of millions of illegally purchased guns to be put out on our streets. There are reasonable approaches to gun control measures. It is possible to obtain these measures on a bipartisan basis, and it is possible to enforce these measures. I think smart gun technology and registration of purchased firearms are a reasonable approach. I think mental illness exams is also a reasonable approach. There are a bevy of ways we can reduce gun violence. The question is, do we as a nation have the collective will to see it happen? Certainly it is a provocative and thought-provoking question. But we as a nation require some introspection. And I think it's an incumbent upon all of us, absolutely everyone, from clergy to elected officials to NRA members to individuals who are strong proponents and advocates of gun rights, we need to look internally and ask ourselves, can we tolerate another school shooting? I heard some congressional leaders talking about arming teachers. Can you imagine the breaking news one day where a teacher, out of some desperation of trying to stave off a student that might be out of sorts, pulls out a gun and shoots a student because that teacher was carrying concealed and he or she had no other way of, quote, defending himself or the other students? Can you imagine the headline? So I think we need to take a rational approach to this, and there are reasonable measures. But again, the point and the question is, can we look internally? Can we say to ourselves, enough is enough? We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I'll wrap up the show. This is Community Voices with Ron Holland on Praise 100.9 and 92.7, Charlotte's Inspiration Station. Praise 100.9 and 92.7 Charlotte's Inspiration Station. The deadly school shooting at Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown, Connecticut will leave an indelible mark in our minds and spirit. Many of the victims of this horrific event have been laid to rest. Over the last week, I've been obsessive in hugging, kissing, and just listening to my 5-year-old son sleep. Events like these can open a floodgate of emotion, insecurity, and feelings of helplessness. I would urge all of us to pray for the victims, pray for the families and the survivors. Most of all, pray for healing. This is Community Voices with Ron Holland. If you have any comments on today's show, please send me an email, ronholland@radio-1.com or ronholland25@yahoo.com. I also invite you to visit my blog for some insightful and provocative commentary, www.ronhollands.blogspot.com. And this show will certainly be available on our Praise Charlotte website. Thank you so much for tuning in to this week's Community Voices. I'm Ron Holland. We'll talk with you next week.